A solar orb flashes to black, and in bold lettering, Showtime. Words appear. Showtime presents. In association with MTV Entertainment Studios. Heist 88. In 1988, the U.S. banking system had yet to become fully computerized. Every day, corporations transferred millions of dollars using only a simple confirmation code. This code would then be used to confirm the transfer by a second bank employee via a phone call. This story is inspired by true events. Daytime. Inside a bank, a sign on a glass wall reads, New Bank of Chicago. A man dressed in a suit and tie enters the bank. His dark brown skin contrasts against his crisp white dress shirt and cream-colored fedora. He slowly walks through the spacious bank and slightly purses his lips. He approaches a line of teller's cages. A red-headed woman with wire glasses stands behind security bars. The man smiles.
I have an international transaction. This is my paperwork.
The cashier opens a leather folder. The name Jeremy Horn appears on a wire transfer for $80 million. The cashier's mouth gapes. She gives a polite smile, then steps away from her cage. The man's smile fades. Words appear. 3 weeks earlier, the city of Chicago appears in an aerial view. Towering over the other buildings, white broadcast antennae extend from the roof of a tiered skyscraper made of aluminum and black glass. An elevated train travels through neighborhoods. A flag with white and blue bands and four red stars flies atop a flagpole. Commuters travel along a city street that winds in front of the Chicago Tribune building. Downtown bridges span the Chicago River. A train crosses a rail bridge. In front of Union Station, a limo driver wears a suit and tie along with a flat cap. He loads Jeremy's luggage into the trunk. Jeremy stares at a memorial notice for Merritt King.
Welcome to Chicago, Mr. Horn. Where am I taking you today?
Jeremy hands the notice to the driver. The driver holds the door. Jeremy gets into the back seat. Next, the black Lincoln Town Car pulls up in front of a large church. Jeremy steps out of the car. Inside, a priest addresses a small congregation.
Thank you all for being here today on the 10-year anniversary of the passing of Merritt King. Merritt King was the epitome of black excellence in our community. He formed coalitions, registered voters, sought alliances, and encouraged the black community to always recognize that our collective voice is more powerful than any one of us. Merritt King worked outside the system in order to change the system. We are very proud of all that he accomplished.
A young man slides into a pew.
So let us light a candle as we leave and pray for his soul and for all the souls he's left behind.
He and Jeremy nod to each other.
Let us pray.
The young man wears his afro styled in a geometric flat top. After the service, he approaches Jeremy.
What up, Uncle Jeremy? I did not expect to see you here.
Well, he was my brother. Just because we weren't close doesn't mean I don't miss him.
Now, my dad used to tell me, whatever you do, stay away from your Uncle Jeremy.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's been good seeing you, Marshall.
Marshall follows Jeremy outside.
Yo, Yo, that's it? That's the extent of our relationship?
You just said you were told to stay away from me.
Hey, look, what my dad said about you was whack. Look, I'm just happy to see you. And I was wondering, actually.
What's going on, Marshall?
Marshall sports a bruise on his cheek under his right eye.
Look, I'm in trouble. I owe money, a lot. I'm trying to get like a bank loan or something to keep these folks up off of me, man, but it's serious. I even got friends that work at First Chicago, but I don't know the first steps to getting a bank loan, huh?
What do your friends do at First Chicago?
All I know is that they deal with money. But I mean, you've dealt with banks and finance, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, they're coming by the studio. You can meet them tonight.
Your friends?
I got a whole career going on, Uncle Jeremy, but I need your help.
Jeremy arrives at a luxury hotel suite. He hangs his fedora on the edge of a dining chair. A red glass of wine sits on the table next to a bottle. Jeremy checks the label on the bottle, then shrugs his mouth in approval. He hangs suits and dress shirts in the closet, then lays out watches and rings in jewelry cases. He opens a briefcase and meticulously lays out leather-bound notebooks and journals on a desk. He takes the phone receiver off the hook, then dials. He sits at the desk with his wine.
Mr. Jeremy Horn, this is the Wayne County Corrections Department, Pre-Incarceration Services. We have not heard from you regarding your agreed-upon surrender in 21 days. If we do not hear from you, you will be in direct violation of your sentencing guidelines. Get in touch with us as soon as you receive this message, or we will be forced to bring you back by any means necessary. We can be reached at 705-5...
He looks through newspaper articles that link him to fraud charges and a foiled bank heist. At a recording studio, Marshall sits in a sound booth and records a singer. Jeremy enters the sound booth. He watches Marshall work alongside another man.
That's the one. Uncle Jeremy, man.
Oh, man, you made it.
They hug.
Yes, sir.
There's a dining room corner. Would you finish up here and let's go down and talk about your situation?
Okay, cool. Hey, tell Rick, Danny, and LaDonna to meet us at the diner, all right? Cool.
At the diner, they sit in a booth.
Explain to me this house music empire. What's your vision?
House is dominating charts, huh?
Scenes overlap. Marshall DJs in a club.
Disco, dance, R&B. That's cool. But house? House music is pure Chicago. And it's right now.
It's blowing up in Detroit, New York, Paris.
I mean, in Manchester, England, that's a club playing all mixes, all tracks. I just gotta build a recording facility along with distribution and manufacturing. I mean, if I could do that, I could be the Barry Gordy of house music.
Just need the money to prove it.
So, Unc, I got mixed up with loan sharks, man. They won't back off.
Look, I'm trying to build an empire, okay?
So you owe them $10,000.
Couldn't get the money anywhere else.
I didn't know any black folks investing in house music. So until I pay them back, they're gonna keep coming in.
In the club, thugs attack Marshall.
More money!
In the diner.
No, I just need to get these guys their money.
He stands as two men and a woman enter.
So this is Danny, LaDonna, and Rick. They all work at the First Chicago. This is my uncle, Jeremy Horn.
Pleasure. Come on in.
Everyone squeezes into the booth.
Mr. Marshall is interested in a bank loan. I take it you all are junior loan officers over at First Chicago.
The three friends exchange looks with Marshall.
He said you all work with money.
I work in the wire transfer department.
Check clearing. Me and Rick work the same night shift.
And we move millions.
They're impressive. Would you all be interested in dinner to discuss further? On me, of course.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Later, they eat their meals.
You all are aware what a powerful position you're in working at one of the largest banks in the country.
Yes, sir.
As you know, many corporations move a lot of their money through your bank. Chicago is the banking hub of the country.
And at the Board of Trade, down on LaSalle Street, it's probably more important to Wall Street. I want to be a stockbroker on the floor of the Board of Trade. That's my dream.
LaDonna, Danny, you have any ambitions at the bank?
I think I like to work on the retail side. Mm. You know, I'm good with people.
Yeah, I can see that.
I'm not. I like systems. How things work.
Yeah, he's good at that.
What do you all make? Minimum wage? What is that?
$3.35.
So yeah, what about that bank loan? Let's talk about that.
Have any of you ever thought about how much money goes directly through you all?
$7,129,000.
Of course, you know the exact amount.
I mean, we all do, because it's not our money.
But I have a good time counting.
And the transfer calls, you cannot make a mistake.
No. Or else you're gone.
Mm-hmm. Have you all ever heard of Ivan Bosky or Michael Milken? Very prominent in the financial world. A little greedy. Hey, let's just say there's a lot of opportunities at a bank for forward-thinking, ambitious people like yourselves.
Danny watches Jeremy with a skeptical look on his face, then glances at Rick.
Well, thank you so much for the meal.
Okay, of course.
Jeremy stands.
It was really nice meeting you. And so we'll see you later, Marshall.
Marshall waves.
Thank you, guys.
Jeremy sits across from Marshall. Marshall frowns.
No, we didn't even talk about the bank loan, Unc. I need that money.
They can't help you with the bank loan, but I can. Here's $10,000. And now you're in control.
He hands Marshall a check.
And now you work for me.
Jeremy locks eyes with Marshall. Marshall stares at the check, then exhales.
Damn! Mm-hmm. Thanks, Unc.
Don't you have to DJ tonight?
Oh, shit. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
you. Mm-hmm. And by the way, what are your friends' names again?
Outside.
Yo, who was that guy?
Mr. Horn asked a lot of questions.
I found it a very stimulating conversation.
Marshall's friends walk together.
Hey, did you notice Mr. Horn's watch? A Stone Cold Rolex?
Yeah?
Damn.
What's a Rolex?
LaDonna, a Rolex is a watch worn by men with money. Aren't you looking for somebody like that?
LaDonna sneers at Rick. Danny and Rick step out of an elevator into an office.
Put 40 hours in at a minimum wage. Friday's here and you get paid.
Danny sits in a cubicle.
And we are opening up the phone lines on tonight's very big topic. Did Mayor Harold Washington really die at his desk? Rumors have some validity. Did the power establishment in Chicago have the mayor taken out? We're taking callers after the break. Stay tuned.
A bus pulls up to a stop.
How long does that life last? It might sound bad or might sound funny.
LaDonna gets off the bus, then enters an apartment. A cartoon plays on a TV. Two girls sit at a table with notebooks open in front of them. LaDonna turns off the TV.
Now, how y'all gonna do homework and watch TV at the same time?
Come on, we do it all the time.
LaDonna picks up a pencil.
Let me see.
She looks over one girl's homework.
And that's why you need to correct this, this, and this.
But, LaDonna, I don't know the answer.
Okay. Well, until you do, TV remains off. Where's Mama?
The older sister glances at her younger sister. LaDonna walks outside to a bar next door. Inside, she watches a woman seated at the bar. The man next to her puts his hand on her leg. She pushes his hand away and sets her drink on the bar. LaDonna watches her, then leaves the bar. At the bank, a woman enters Rick's cubicle.
Hi, Rick. Can we talk a second?
You're here late?
He stands next to her.
What's up?
She holds a clipboard.
Rick, we all thought that this was the year for your promotion to the day shift, but it didn't happen.
I don't understand. What happened? You said I had...
I know. It just wasn't the time. Maybe next year.
I've been here for 6 years, Marion.
I know. And I went to bat for you. I'm real sorry. Have a good night.
Harriet leaves. Rick closes his eyes, looks up at the ceiling, and sighs. Danny watches their interaction with keen interest. Rick storms into another part of the office. He pushes binders onto the floor, then leans on a photocopier. Marshall moves through the busy club carrying a crate of records. walks down a hallway, then enters an office. He sets the metal crate on top of a TV. A graffiti-style mural on the wall features him at a turntable spinning records. Marshall takes an ice cube tray out of a small bar fridge, then sits on a cot and holds the ice up to his swollen and bruised cheek. Danny and Rick ride an elevated train.
Harriet says she went to bat for me.
Yeah, I don't trust any of them.
What am I gonna do? Look for a new job? I got bills, man.
But Rick, we are pawns on a chessboard, man. Expendable. So stop thinking they care about us.
Why are you so cynical, man?
Because I'm black at a banquet making $3.35 an hour. Why aren't you cynical?
I still think there are good people at the bank, like Harriet.
Danny hands Rick a piece of paper.
All right, check this out. Let me go. So my boy Joe Simmons, he investigated this. So look, he noticed there was a $1 discrepancy in everyone's paychecks for 3 years.
Yeah, that's a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, goddamn right it is. All right, so Joe, he decided to do this statistical analysis. He then had this meeting with Harry.
Wait, hold up. That's big time.
Yeah. Joe calculated he saved the bank $12 million.
So Joe said they found the guy responsible, just some guy, and he's still working at the bank, and you know if he looks like you or me.
He would not still be working at the bank.
You're damn right.
Joe said they probably docked his pay. Yeah, that's not even the worst part. You know what Joe got? He got a freaking dinner at the Ponderosa.
No.
Nice little attaboy, Joe.
In an overlapping scene, Joe stares at a free steak dinner coupon.
Man, I need a break. Yo, I gotta find a way to make some money.
Man, Rick, either you buy what they are selling, which is hope, pray they advance you, or you just let it go and move on.
Rick hands the paper back to Danny. At the bank, LaDonna sits at her desk. She puts a cassette tape into a boombox, then hits the play button. She dances in her chair. A bank of five phones covers her desk.
This is LaDonna Page, Transfer Operations Department. This call is being recorded for security purposes. Oh, good morning, Mr. Davis. How are your kids doing? Back in school, that is great. Oh, you'd like to transfer $5,150,000? And what is your transfer code?
She types on a keyboard.
I will repeat that back. 59*59183152. That is correct.
She pops her bubble gum.
Please hold for a second confirmation.
Inside an apartment, Rick lies on a couch.
Come on, one more big bite. You gotta say bye to Daddy.
No. We're eating this apple.
Then finish the one you have. Hey, Pumpkin, you want a cookie? Mm-hmm. Just one.
But I want to buy one.
Come on, one more.
I'm gonna get one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, come on. Let's say bye to Danny. Here, put it down.
Danny returns to his house in the daytime. He pauses at the front door, then sits on the step with a takeout coffee.
Hey,
stop it, Tyree!
Hey, Danny.
Hey, look here, Danny. It's my place, all right? I tell you to bring these old boxes of nerdy-ass comic books in here anyway, and if I tell you, I'll get them out of my living room, I mean it. Now, I already told my sister this, and I'm telling you, as soon as that baby drops, y'all best find new accommodations so I can bring my honeys home and get back to my life. You feel me? Tyree, thank you for that. Also, I really need you to stop shouting at me.
Knock it off. I'm going to work.
Danny's pregnant wife, Renee, walks past him down the stairs. Danny stares at Tyree, then turns away. Jeremy stands on a downtown street corner. A man slumps on the sidewalk and shakes an empty cup. A dark-skinned man in a flat cap and dark sunglasses walks up beside Jeremy.
What you doing in Chicago? Memorial service for my brother.
They walk together.
So, Jeremy, I got your message. Here we are. What's going on?
I'm contemplating a big bank. You ever work with amateurs?
One of my best scores. Your amateur's inside?
in good positions.
But you're not convinced. You know the system?
Very well. Let's just say the weakness in the banking system needs to be tested.
40 years in the game. Technology changes. Gadgets and shit come and go. But nothing beats working with people who want what you want. Here are the keys. It's an empty space. Over on Washington. Should be pretty private.
They stop in front of an art museum.
That picture looks very familiar.
You have the real one, Ray. We took it together, don't you remember?
Yes.
You're absolutely right.
Yes.
Ray takes off his sunglasses and admires an exhibition banner.
But Jeremy, Ree's Air
was a disaster.
It was more than that. I was this close to being back inside. Now, if you want to remain my friend.
You're more than my friend.
If you want to remain my friend, let's forget about what happened. And pledge never to work together again. Can we make that deal?
Jeremy shakes Ray's hand.
Have you even spoken to Bree?
Ray walks away, chagrined. Jeremy closes his eyes for a moment. He looks across the street and spots a campaign office for Willie Gator Thompson, running for alderman. A woman with brown skin and long black hair smiles as she talks on the phone. A smile slowly spreads on Jeremy's face. Next, he falls in step with Bree as she leaves the campaign office.
Let's go for a walk.
What are you doing here, Jeremy?
I admit, Bree's Air was a bust.
It could have worked if your guy wasn't so greedy.
My guy? What? My guy? You brought him in.
Are you serious right now? I was dating Zach. Nobody told you to recruit him.
Bree scowls. Jeremy gives an indignant look as they walk down the block.
Look, we both let the wrong guy in.
Yes, we did. Both let the wrong guy in. But I have another opportunity for you.
They cross the street.
I am not messing with you anymore, Jeremy.
You haven't even heard me
out. I don't care. Right now, I'm working a straight gig getting this guy elected.
Politics?
Yes, politics. It's the same game, just simple misdirection. And a steady paycheck. But you know what, Jeremy? I've lost my appetite. I gotta get back to work. All right.
No. Please don't say those.
No, it was fun while it lasted. Yeah. Just leave Chicago. Forget this opportunity.
She crosses the street and heads back to the campaign office.
Bye, Jeremy.
Jeremy watches her leave and shakes his head. Danny and his wife stand in the front yard.
Fed up. Okay?
I'm fed up with Tom Reed.
You know what? Neither one of y'all is right here, okay?
Jeremy's town car pulls up. He lowers the window and watches them.
Enough. I can do.
Figure it out.
Okay, help me.
I can't. Get us out of this house.
At a bus stop.
Ma, I promise as soon as I get a raise, we're going to ride this bus to work.
I'll be here.
The bus pulls up during a drive-by shooting.
Oh, no. You okay? I love you. You okay?
His mother boards the bus in a panic. Across the street, Jeremy watches Rick from the town car. At night, LaDonna's sisters wave from a second-floor window as LaDonna arrives at the building. She crosses paths with her mother.
Please, no. It's one drink.
Her mother walks to the bar on the corner. LaDonna looks up at her sisters as they step back from the window. LaDonna slumps on a chair sitting on the sidewalk. Across the street, Jeremy watches her, then raises the car window. In the daytime, Jeremy stares up at the tiered skyscraper. Flashbacks overlap.
Just leave Chicago. Forget this opportunity.
Surrender in 21 days. If we do not hear from you, you will be in direct violation of your sentencing guidelines. Touch with us as soon as you receive this message, or we'll be forced to bring you back by any means.
But nothing beats working with people who want what you want. If you do, you'll go.
At the recording studio, Marshall sits at a soundboard. A man hands him a card. The front of the card is addressed to him. The back of the card reads, "Business Opportunity." At the bank, LaDonna, Rick, and Danny all receive identical cards. The invitation to a private event lists a date, time, and location along with instructions that guests will receive $500 for attending. At night, the four friends arrive at an industrial warehouse. Jeremy stands next to a whiteboard.
Mr. Horn, are we in the right place for the business opportunity?
Yes, come in.
I'm glad you're all here for the presentation. Please, take a seat.
What's up, huh?
I invited you all here to present a proposal to you all because I respect you. This $500 in the envelope in front of you, it's yours for being here, part of the business opportunity. You three work at one of the largest banks in the country using wire transfer with voice phone confirmations. Now, let me be clear. Everything I'm going to say to you here, I've done before.
Done what? Why are we here?
What is this about?
I will show you how to move money from corporate bank accounts to your own bank account.
LaDonna, Rick, and Danny walk away. Marshall intercepts them.
Hey, come on. Hear him out, all right? Just hear him out. Sit down.
Jeremy erases a handwritten message on the whiteboard that reads, $235 million. He lays photos of himself on the table.
Everything you see here.
He appears with luxury cars and private jets.
I own.
Damn, huh? Where you get all this?
I've created wealth for myself by understanding that a bank's loss is my gain.
He stands next to an overhead projector.
I know their system.
He displays a news article.
Banks lose funds every year. They're careless, bloated, top-heavy, and inefficient.
A headline reads, banks switching to computers.
Your jobs will be gone very soon. You've been at the bank for years. No savings to speak of, no college degrees, no opportunities for advancement. Am I wrong?
Yeah, what's it to you?
You don't know the first thing about our lives anyway.
He turns off the projector.
I've seen your lives. I know how each of you are living. You want better lives for yourselves, for your families? Help me rob the First National Bank of Chicago, and I will make each of you very, very wealthy.
Marshall shakes his head. Danny's eyes widen behind his glasses. LaDonna's mouth gapes. Rick hangs his head and leans on his knees. Danny gets up from the table and paces.
LaDonna? You wire millions every day talking to corporate officers at each company.
They move their own money.
But you have the transfer codes. They change every hour, but you have access to them, yes?
Every transfer needs a second confirmation from the corporation.
That is why my plan works. We set it up so that Danny or Rick receive that second call. Instead of the company's number, LaDonna will have a different number to call, and we will control that call because we will be that executive.
That's crazy. How are we gonna be that executive?
I will train your voices to sound like the corporate officers approving the transfers. The transfers confirmed, millions to our accounts. The system has a glitch. We take advantage of it, get rich, then leave the country.
We have family here.
And you'll be millionaires. They will join you.
LaDonna stands.
You said this money is mine, right?
Yes.
She grabs the $500 from the envelope.
Good. Because I'm taking my black ass home.
She tucks the cash in her bra.
That's your prerogative.
She stops and turns back.
And you know what? I could call the police on you and tell the bank too.
Why would you do that? When you stand to have millions. Go. If I never speak to you again, at least you'll be $500 richer.
He slides a silver watch across the table.
With a new Rolex.
LaDonna raises her eyebrows and stares at the watch. Marshall, Rick, and Danny furrow their brows and focus on the Rolex. LaDonna slowly crosses back to the table, then picks up the watch. Jeremy sets a notepad on the table.
Make a list of all the corporate officers requesting wire transfers weekly. Don't take too long to decide. I'm seeing other people.
He picks up his briefcase, then dons a brown fedora on his way out. Marshall stands and shoves the money in his pocket. Outside, the four friends follow Jeremy. Two thugs step out from behind a dumpster.
Yo, free!
Shut up! You know what time it is.
They hold Jeremy at gunpoint.
Shut up!
The four friends cower behind the dumpster.
Watch!
Got no watch.
Wallet!
Just going real slow, brother. Going real slow. There you go.
Give me the briefcase.
Nah, stop. That's enough.
Give me the briefcase!
No.
Just give it to him, huh?
Jeremy disarms one of the thugs and points his gun.
Drop it.
Jeremy fires at the thug's foot as the other thug runs off.
Should have shot him?
Jeremy picks up the other gun, then drops it down a sewer grate.
I really look forward to seeing you all real soon. Really.
The friends stare in disbelief as Jeremy leaves. In the daytime, outside his house, Danny holds his head, then paces. LaDonna sits at the table with her sisters and holds an overdue bill notice. Rick shoots a basketball into a hoop hung in an alley. He frowns and slams the ball hard. Sweat rolls down his face as he leans against a tree. Marshall's loan shark eats in his car. Marshall pulls up next to him. Marshall tosses him an envelope.
That's 10 grand, all right?
But you best never lay hands on me again.
Danny, Rick, and LaDonna eat bag lunches.
I am not clearing checks till I'm 50. Are you?
They sit outside.
Mr. Horn's proposing could work.
Mr. Horn ain't trying to save us.
He needs us. We need him.
I don't need anybody.
What is your problem, man?
Why us?
Why not us?
This is literally like a lottery ticket.
To be accurate, the odds on a single lottery ticket are 800,500,000 to one. This is far better.
I don't know about you, Rick, but I'm tired of living like I'm living.
I've checked Mr. Horn's facts. He's right. We can redirect that second call anywhere. My house, your house, a phone booth.
When the first call come in, and I'll just call the number he gives me and use the current code.
And if I'm the first call, Rick, gotta be the second.
It's just risky as hell.
Yo, man, y'all got lunch?
Marshall arrives.
Man, you know, I filmed a music video right here. Look at that view.
Marshall, is your uncle for real? Because he coming on strong like a bull.
Here's the deal, all right? The last thing my dad told me before he died was to stay away from Uncle Jeremy. Is he real? Yeah, real as a heart attack.
I mean, you don't work at the bank. What does he want you to do?
Shit, whatever he wants.
I work for him.
But are you a criminal?
We not criminals. Look, I call it payback for being born black.
Marshall points emphatically.
Say that again when you're sitting in the jail cell.
I'm sick of you. You dress like you went to some top school and you act like you better than us half the time. And what now, Rick? Huh? You punking out? This is our chance. Don't you see that?
Yeah, that's real talk, Rick.
We are talking
about robbing a goddamn bank. Where we work!
Hey, look, man, Jeremy Horn knows what he's doing, all right? We listen, learn, get this money, and never look back. We pull this off, we gonna own Chicago.
We pull this off, we'll never be able to live in Chicago again.
Are you ready for that, Mr. King of House?
Hell yeah! Shit, we get this money and we put this music out everywhere. All right?
Danny turns away. Marshall holds out his hand, palm facing down.
All in or what? Come on, Danny.
Danny stacks his hand on top of Marshall's. LaDonna hesitates, then places her hand on top of Danny's.
Rick, we do this together or not?
Rick looks back at them.
Come on, man.
With his brow in a deep furrow, Rick slowly walks over, then locks eyes with Marshall.
Let's get paid.
He puts his hand on top of the others. Men's photos appear on the whiteboard.
Here are all the names you requested.
Thank you, Lieutenant. We focus on these five. Why?
They keep large balances.
What else?
The balances are not checked for 48 to 72 hours.
Which means that we can make transfers that land clear and can be withdrawn in that gap time. By then, the money will be long gone, but so will we.
Nicely done. These are our accounts in the Bank of Geneva, Switzerland, for our company, Strand Investments, LLC. I'm the chairman. You're all board members. These are our targets. Learn their lives, how they speak, what they love, who they love.
Learn this information and destroy it. This is Mark Hamilton,
corporate officer at Northern Levers. Lives in Wilmette.
I know. I speak to him weekly.
Good. Well, then you'll follow him. Learn everything about him. This is a team effort. Are we ready?
Sometime later, outside.
Watch and learn.
Jeremy conceals a tape recorder.
First step, get close to your target with the tape recorder. Then let them talk. With the recordings, we listen and learn the details of their lives and how they speak. Then we mimic their voices.
LaDonna walks around an upscale neighborhood carrying a clipboard and a tape recorder. She wears a name tag clipped to her shirt with a leather bag slung over her shoulder. A car pulls in front of her into a driveway. She turns the tape recorder on, dons a pair of glasses, then approaches a couple outside the house.
Excuse me. Good evening, you two. I'm Sandy Johnson. I'm with the U.S. Census. We do know that you did fill out your census. I'm just here with a few follow-up questions.
Okay, shoot.
For me to be happy and my wife to show off.
Jeremy listens to recordings.
Long hours at the office. I need a comfort car.
Yeah, this guy's an asshole.
These are the facts of his life. The small talk, his truth. Listen to this and learn.
I bought the BMW for me to be happy and for my wife to show off.
Rick tries an impression.
Long hours at the office. I need a comfort car.
Hey, look, I need birthdays, place of birth, and also I need photos, okay, ASAP.
What for?
Passports.
Jeremy Horn, this is Mr. Podesky from the Wayne County Pre-Incarceration Services calling you again. We are aware that you are currently in Chicago. You have not checked in. Must hear from you immediately to confirm your surrender, so we're sending federal marshals to bring you in.
Jeremy stands at a payphone as protesters march past. Jeremy writes in a notebook. A nearby sign reads, Justice and Peace Rally, Fridays at 10 a.m. at the warehouse.
On the day, LaDonna, Danny, and Rick will blend into this crowd for cover when leaving the bank. Marshall drives up, everybody gets in one by one, and we go.
Got you, huh?
Let's go over it again, step by step. Marshall.
At a.m., I'm gonna check on the flights, travel to O'Hare, gas up the car, confirm where to hide.
LaDonna.
Leave my place by 8 a.m., get on the train, be at my desk by 8:30.
Danny.
8 a.m., wrap up work on the night shift, drop off the comic book to my boy in the wire room, talk and occupy him while listening for incoming corporate transfer calls.
Rick.
8 a.m., get off work, get on subway, make it home by 8:30.
I'll be at Dearborn outside the bank at 8:30. We're on, transfer everything by 10. Understood?
Got it.
Jeremy hands out pagers.
We'll use these pagers to communicate on the big day.
Our codes will be simple. One is approved, two is stop, and three is hurry. Memorize this.
Danny, you're up.
Ready?
Well, I like to deal with my employees in a very specific way.
Danny speaks into a microphone.
Now, I like to deal with my employees in a very specific way.
Yes?
I say.
He hands the microphone to Rick.
Our company really wants people who understand the culture and understand the tools that I think really make us the best company to work for.
And that's how it's done.
You see that?
Yes.
Jeremy stands at the whiteboard.
Ah, it's Geneva with an E.
He corrects spelling on the board.
Why am I the only one to get called out like that?
At the campaign office.
Yes, thank you so much. Oh, he's gonna appreciate it. All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bree opens the door to a man delivering a bouquet of flowers.
Hello. Oh, thank you.
Bree takes a dozen roses from him, then checks the card. At the bank, Harriet leads a tour for three gray-haired men in suits.
This is check clearing and the transfers department.
Everyone here with their years of experience have helped decrease clearance times considerably.
Hmm.
We hear about computerization across all departments. You are prepared for this? Do you feel ready?
Yes, we have already started the transition. In 2 weeks, this department will be completely computerized with a new system in place, so verbal confirmations of funds transferred will no longer be necessary. First National Bank of Chicago should be fully computerized by the end of the month.
LaDonna overhears. At night, she approaches Jeremy's town car. The driver opens the door and she gets in the back seat.
Mr. Horn, we have a big problem. If we want this to happen, we need to move now. The bank is computerizing top to bottom. Accounting, auditing, check clearing, and wire transfers.
Shit. Look.
The department keeps the updated account balances on printouts. Harriet gets a copy from our secretary daily. A duplicate copy is kept on ledgers on the 11th floor in the machine room next to Harriet's office. Nowhere else. The only way to get in that room is with a key card. I mean, I could get the codes, but...
Without the printouts with the current balances, we can't move.
We won't know the balances, but I could estimate based on...
No, it's too risky. I need to go in the bank and get the printouts. And I need key cards.
This is really gonna happen, Mr. Moore.
New plan. Instead of going after the entire $235 million, we will target the $80 million from the three companies you speak to daily.
So, it's on Rick to handle the second confirmation. He will be the corporate officers from
Ben Holland Distillers.
LaDonna takes notes.
Kepler Buyers. Northern Lepers. Call Rick.
Tell him he must get a meeting with Harriet for Friday morning and a key card for the computer room.
LaDonna. Okay.
LaDonna gets out of the car. Ray arrives at a lavish restaurant and joins Bree at a table.
But Ray, what are you doing here?
I was about to ask you the same thing.
I think I need to get out of here.
She stands.
Yeah.
Jeremy arrives as they get ready to leave.
It's so good to see you. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you could make it. Oh, please.
Sit.
Wonderful.
They all sit at the table.
If a SWAT team rolls up on us right now, I will never forgive you.
Fear not, Puduway. We're just here having a lovely dinner. When was the last time we were all together?
Detroit. Bree's heir, Jeremy, the bane of my existence.
I second that.
I know the awkward position I put you in recently.
Awkward? Unbelievable.
See, I can't speak for Buddha Ray, but Jeremy, life is much too short me.
And that's why I've asked you both here.
He stands between them and lifts his pant leg.
Shit, Jeremy, a tracking bracelet? What'd you do now?
I'm gonna do five for Bree's heir.
He returns to his seat.
Zach got probation naming names. And instead of him burning you, I took a plea. I surrender in a few weeks.
So this is one last score?
$80 million.
Bree arches her eyebrow.
So, well, you'll be set when you get out.
No. I'm doing this score for you. You both get part of the split because I blew it for Bree's heir, your family. I needed to make it right.
This is not free money. What do you need, Jeremy?
2 hours. This Friday. You're a pair of bank auditors. You're not the show. You're decoys, so I can grab some intel. You're in and out.
This last go-around really didn't sit well with me. I shouldn't even be thinking about this shit, but... screw it. Any opportunity to stick it to the man is worth my time and attention. Whatever you need.
Just like that.
Bree, we stick together. We always stick together, right?
Right.
Now, you two need to get your shit together.
Ray stands, then kisses Bree on the cheek. He touches her shoulder, then shakes hands with Jeremy and leans close.
Contact me with the particulars. Now, I'm gonna go soak my veins in some Popeyes. This shit is too rich for my blood.
Jeremy kisses Ray's cheek. Ray pats Bree on the shoulder, then leaves. Jeremy sits, then smiles at Bree.
The white gloves always work, and you know it.
He hands her a pair of white gloves. Bree reluctantly grabs them. A lighted sign reads, Miller's Pub. Inside, Rick sits at the bar. Harriet enters with a man.
Rick Lewis.
She crosses to Rick, then shakes his hand.
It's great to see you. Are you here watching the game?
Yep.
This is my husband, John. John works for the Board of Trade. Honey, this is Rick Lewis from the bank.
Oh, yes. Harriet is very high on you. Said you're headed for bigger and better things.
Would you like to join us?
I'd love to.
Great.
Later.
I love finance. No stocks, bonds. I've really studied it for some while now. But they say that you learn when you're on the floor.
No, that's true. College isn't always that important for this. Just sharp decision making. I have a market maker trainee position open. It pays a competitive rate with room for advancement. It's yours if you want it.
I could arrange for you to transition out of the bank in 30 days.
It's more money, a new career.
I would be sad to see you go.
Wow. Harriet, that I... Can we meet in your office on Friday to talk about everything? I can stay after my shift.
How's 10 a.m.?
Perfect.
More wine?
Please.
Yes.
Jeremy sleeps in his hotel suite. A clock reads 11:37. Wearing blue pinstriped pajamas, he sits up, turns on a light, then takes a silver revolver out of a nightstand. He puts a robe over his pajamas, then walks to the door with the gun behind his back. He peers through a peephole. He puts the revolver in his robe pocket, then opens the door. Rick stands in the hallway.
Unexpected.
He enters.
What's up?
I need to talk to you.
Talk.
Rick looks around the spacious suite.
Wow. This is a nice place.
It'll do in a pinch.
The suite features draped valances on tall windows and white columns. Jeremy sits on a tufted couch.
Talk.
Okay. Well.
Rick sits on a couch across from him.
Yeah. Everything's set with Harriet. 10 a.m., her office. The computer room is right next door. Here's the key card to get in.
Good job. But you could have given this to me at our next meetup. Why are you here tonight?
Harriet's husband works for the Board of Trade.
Okay.
And he just offered me a great job. I've always wanted to work at the Board of Trade. He wanted me to start in 30 days.
In 30 days, you'll be worth millions.
I know, but this is like a really huge opportunity for me.
Promises. You can fill the seas with the promises made to black folks in this country. But nothing's going to change until we do what needs to be done. And after the millions are in your account, I think you'll feel like I do. The power to do anything for anyone.
I do. I honestly do want to help people.
Mm-hmm. And you will.
Why do you want to do this?
Because the system needs to be tested.
Two men walk up behind Rick. He turns to look at them. He recognizes the thugs from the alley.
They tried to rob you, Mr. Horn.
That is correct. And they work for me. At home, do you have a cordless touchtone phone or a rotary dial phone?
A rotary. It's on my wall.
One of the thugs hands him a plastic bag.
Okay.
Take that, please. On transfer day, unplug your home phone and plug that one in. Don't screw this up, Rick. Understand?
He pats Rick's cheek.
See yourself out.
The sun rises outside First National Bank. Jeremy, Ray, and Bree enter through a revolving door. Bree wears the white gloves. Jeremy and Ray carry briefcases. They walk past a reception desk to a set of elevators. Bree spots a group of women, then nods to Ray and Jeremy.
Excuse me, are the loan officers on this floor or the 10th floor?
Well, commercial loans are on 10, retail's on 5.
And on this floor is mostly personal and home loans, correct?
That's correct.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And I love your hair. All of you. So it's the 10th floor.
10th floor.
Right.
Shall we?
As Ray and Bree engage the women, Jeremy steals their ID badges, then gives them to Ray.
Oh, the lift is here.
Ah.
Here we are. It's the 10th floor.
Next, the three of them get off the elevator on the 10th floor. Jeremy swipes a key card at a door to a restricted area. A light flashes green on the card reader. He enters the restricted area and walks down a hallway lined with doors. He passes other employees gathered by cubicles. He sits at a desk in a cubicle as Bree and Ray enter. Jeremy points down a hallway to his left. Rick waits outside an office. Harriet exits. Bree and Ray intercept her.
I'm so sorry. I'm Bridget Mason.
And I'm Raymond Oliver.
We're independent outside auditors, and we feel a bit lost right now.
Is the audit department on this floor?
Oh, I wonder how you two wound up here.
Oh, we wondered that ourselves.
Independent auditors are always given the wrong information.
Well, that is too true. No, the audit.
Jeremy swipes his key card, then enters the machine room.
Rick, I will be right with you. Why don't you have a seat in my office, okay? Come with me. I love your gloves, by the way.
Thank you.
Rick glances down the hall, then enters Harriet's office.
12th floor, right?
Yes, you're going to come right on over here.
Jeremy pulls out three separate ledgers from different stacks on top of a filing cabinet. He lays them out on a table, then opens one of the ledgers and scans the balance sheet using a ruler. He tears out the front page and sets it inside his briefcase. He tears a sheet out of a second ledger, then a third. He leaves behind small edges of paper inside the ledger in his haste. Places the ledgers back on the stacks, then picks up his briefcase and leaves. Just as he reaches the door, Harriet arrives and scans her key card.
Harriet!
Rick steps out of her office.
10 o'clock, right?
Rick, I'm sorry.
Harriet heads to her office. Rick follows her inside. Jeremy peers out the door, then slips out. He meets Ray and Bree by the elevator. They exchange knowing looks. Jeremy stifles a grin. Next, the three of them walk through the lobby of the building. Bree flashes a wide grin. In the recording studio.
I got your page, Rick. What's up, man?
I was in Harriet's office, and I saw two other people Mr. Horn's working with. Mr. Horn got the printouts. But it's weird.
Tell them the rest.
LaDonna smacks Rick. Rick sits between her and Danny.
The guys that tried to rob Mr. Horn that night, they now work for him.
So they're now in the deal too?
We do all the work, take all the risks, but other people are in on the deal?
Yeah, we may not get our share, and we lose our jobs too.
I don't trust them.
Did your uncle mention anything about these two people, these dudes that mugged us?
In hell no. Look, I need to...
Marshall spots the singer through a window.
Why is she talking to their record company?
He leaves the sound booth.
Hey, what are you doing?
Marshall, calm down, brother. You a lot of talk, but no money.
I've been talking to do this song for months. Look, I got a British distributor, and they ordered 100,000 copies, all right? And this how you gonna do me? You know, this shit is unprofessional.
I'm signing with them, okay? I'm out.
Are you just gonna walk off?
Three men from the recording company follow her out. Marshall returns to the sound booth. He knocks a cup of pencils on the floor. At night, Ray and Bree sit with Jeremy at the warehouse.
Your crew is late.
Not a good look, Jeremy.
Shh. Why do you always gotta be late?
You're late!
Marshall and LaDonna frown at Ray.
Yo, huh? Who are these folks?
They're professionals I trust who show up on time.
Hold on, Unc. See, all I asked for was a little help. But now we all knee deep and robbing a damn bank.
Lower your voice, son.
This does not look like commitment to me, Jeremy.
You know, I know you're going to prison soon, but with this crew, you might want to think about turning yourself in a little earlier.
Yeah, I don't know how all of this is going to work out, but it won't be with us. Let's go.
Ray and Bree walk past the four friends. Jeremy purses his lips.
Going to jail?
Jeremy looks down.
Do you even care about what happens to us?
I really don't give a damn who those people are. I just know that we're leaving our families and we'll never see them again. What is our future?
I have no idea what your future will be, LaDonna. But when I was 14 and the teacher said I was good with numbers, what was my future? When I was on the honor roll and got into the top schools, but we couldn't afford for me to go, what was my future? When I fought, scrapped, and begged my way to get into Bear Shaffer Securities and became the top trader as an intern, but they didn't want me, what was my future? When I knew I could figure out anything to do with the movement of capital anywhere in the world, what was my future? I tried to go in the front door with my gifts, LaDonna. But the back door is where the opportunities came for me to have a future. Yes, I got caught. And I'm gonna go to prison. I'm gonna do my prison term because I love my family. Marshall, you're my brother's son, and you're my family. You all are my family now, and I want you all to have life the way you want to take it, not struggle and grind and be shat on. Like I was. So. LaDonna, Marshall, Danny, Rick, what's your future gonna be? I said we go get this money.
The sun rises over downtown Chicago. At home, Danny stuffs clothes in a backpack.
You have a good time at Music Fest, baby. You've been working hard.
Thanks, Renee. It was just a couple days. You know, I cannot wait for our daughter to be born.
Me too, honey.
In his kitchen, Ray hugs his family.
Well, we are gonna go play.
Yeah, Daddy, we're going to the park. What are you doing?
Baby girl, I already told you I'm going to Music Fest with Daddy's friends.
Mm-hmm. Have a good time this weekend.
They kiss. LaDonna's sisters watch their mother fold laundry.
Okay, yeah.
LaDonna enters the living room.
Why can't we go to Music Fest? Because y'all too young.
LaDonna's mother shoots her a look of disapproval. LaDonna smiles at her sisters.
I'll call y'all. Come here.
She wraps them both up in a hug. At the recording studio, Marshall looks around his office at turntables and crates of records. He turns off the light, then leaves. In his hotel suite, Jeremy wipes down services including the phone, door handles, and light switches. Renee takes off Danny's glasses and looks him in the eye.
You okay?
I'm good.
He leans in and gives her tender kisses.
Oh, baby.
He dons his glasses, then slings a backpack over his shoulder on his way out. LaDonna walks up steps leading from the subway. She stops at the top of the steps and stares at the bank building. She purses her lips and exhales, then nods and continues down the block. Jeremy stands on the sidewalk and looks at the multi-story building. watches LaDonna enter the bank, then crosses to a payphone. Danny walks toward the bank building. He stops and looks up at the building and the surrounding skyscrapers. Marshall stands on the street and leans against his parked car. He smokes a cigarette and looks up at the buildings. Marshall moves crates of records from the back seat of his car to the trunk. At his cubicle, Danny digs through a drawer filled with comics.
Hey, Danny, what are you still doing here?
He turns to a coworker.
Working a double shift. Bills to pay.
Danny looks up at a clock on the wall that reads 8:57. He walks to another cubicle and puts a comic on a coworker's desk.
This is it?
The rare edition.
Oh, man, you bought it!
Mm-hmm.
The co-worker stands.
Where are you going?
Taking my morning dump, then I'm reading this. Would cover my phone.
Yeah, I got you.
LaDonna sits at the neighboring desk and watches Danny. The co-worker runs to the bathroom. A supervisor walks past with a clipboard.
Just going to the bathroom. It's covering.
She nods to Danny, then continues down the row of cubicles. Danny and LaDonna exchange a look. At home, Rick gets out the new phone, along with a pager and a notepad. He sets everything out on the kitchen table, then waits anxiously. Jeremy waits at the payphone. LaDonna drums her manicured nails on the desk and watches as the clock ticks closer to 9 a.m. A transfer code populates on a field on her computer screen. She writes it down on a notepad, then makes a call. In a split screen, four pages display the transfer code. Danny looks over at LaDonna. Marshall clips his pager to his waistband, then tosses his cigarette. Jeremy checks his pager, then plugs coins into a payphone. Rick writes the transfer number on the notepad. Jeremy lifts the receiver to his ear. Danny and LaDonna overhear a woman at a nearby desk.
This is First Chicago Transfer Operations. This phone call is being recorded for security purposes. How may I help you this morning?
Good morning. This is Peter Jenkins at Northern Levers. I'd like to wire $22 million to Strand Investments.
$22 million to Strand Investments. Your transfer code, sir.
87-2459-567.
Thank you, sir. I repeat.
87-2459-567. Please hold for second confirmation.
The woman tears a slip of paper from a pad, then hands it over a glass partition to LaDonna. LaDonna places a call. Rick stares at the phone on the table. He crosses from the window and sits down. He picks up the receiver, then furrows his brow. LaDonna's eyes dart. Rick lifts the receiver again, then taps the hook switch. He plugs the phone cord into a different wall jack. He finds another phone jack in the hallway, then plugs the phone in.
Come on. Hello?
This is LaDonna in Transfer Operations. This call is being recorded for security purposes. Calling for a second confirmation on a transfer, $22 million from Northern Levers to Strand Investments, LLC. And who am I speaking with, please?
This is Mark Hampton, Corporate Finance Officer at Northern Levers.
Good morning, Mr. Hampton. How is that car of yours?
LaDonna, you wouldn't believe it. I tell you, that wife of mine, she drove straight into the city. She knows good and well she can't drive in traffic. Came back with a dent.
Just unbelievable.
Oh, no. Will he be okay?
It'll be fine. I've got the best auto body guy in the city.
Turns old into new. Takes accidents, make them non-accidents.
Good. Please approve a transfer of $22 million from Northern Levers to Strand Investments, LLC. Code number, please.
Okay. Code number 87-2459-567.
LaDonna types it in.
The code is correct. This transfer is approved. You have a great day, Mr. Hampton.
Same to you.
LaDonna smiles. Rick's eyes widen as he pushes back from the table and raises his hands. The pagers display the number one. Marshall kisses his pager, then pumps his fist. Danny nervously licks his lips. Jeremy checks his notes, then makes another call.
This is Danny in Transfers Operations.
Yo!
His co-worker returns.
Great story, man. I forgot my glasses.
LaDonna watches the co-worker.
I'm almost done.
You can keep it.
This is good.
He leaves.
It's good.
I am so sorry about that. This is Danny in Transfers Operations. This phone call will be recorded for security purposes. How can I help you?
Yes, this is Robert Williams from Kepler Buyers. I'd like to transfer $25 million.
Strand Investment, LLC.
How are you?
I am doing great, Mr. Williams. I have it. You will be rooting for U of I this year.
That's right. That's my team. Yes, they are my team.
Excellent. Excellent. Do you have the transfer code for this transaction?
Of course I do. You ready?
This is LaDonna from First National Bank of Chicago calling for second confirmation on a transfer of $25 million from Kepler Buyers to Strand Investments, LLC.
Code, of course. It's 87-STAR.
The code is correct.
All right, sir. That's $33 million from Ben Holland Distillers to Strand Investments, LLC. Please hold for second confirmation.
This is LaDonna in transfer operations.
Code number is 87-STAR.
This transfer is approved. You have a good day.
LaDonna sends the number one to all of the pagers. Marshall starts the car and drives off. Rick smashes the phone with a hammer, then puts it in a trash bag. He leaves his apartment, then drops the bag into a dumpster. He runs off wearing a backpack. The clock at the bank reads 9:57. LaDonna gets up from her desk, then slings a backpack over her shoulder. She hurries out. Danny follows her. A train pulls into a station. Rick walks upstairs from the subway. He spots the protesters.
Justice! Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
LaDonna and Danny step into the elevator. Danny swallows hard. Outside.
What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
Rick joins the protesters. Danny and LaDonna slip into the group and join the chant.
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
What do we want?
Now!
What do we want?
Marshall pulls up. Jeremy watches from across the street. He nods to Rick. Rick, LaDonna, and Danny leave the protesters and get into Marshall's car.
Marshall, get us out of here. Let's go. Let's go.
Jeremy watches the car drive away. He makes another call. In the car.
I can't believe you pulled it off. This is crazy.
We did it.
Yo, calm down, all right? It's not over yet. Stick to the plan, okay? Gotta lay low.
They pull up to a hotel by the airport. Marshall tosses the keys to a valet and they head into the hotel.
I don't understand what the issue is.
Just transfer the funds from Strand Investment LLC to the Bank of Geneva. I've already authorized it. You have my code number.
That is correct, sir. It has been authorized, but you must come into the bank. That is the regulation for this transaction.
There's no way around this. I'm on my way to Geneva.
No, sir. For this level of transfer, the new Bank of Chicago requires you to be here in person.
Day turns to night in a time-lapse video. At the hotel, LaDonna lies on a bed. A clock next to her reads 8:22. Rick watches TV. LaDonna sits up. Across the hotel suite, Marshall paces and smokes a cigarette. One of the thugs sits in a chair with a drink, and Danny reads a comic book. LaDonna crosses the room.
We've been in here for hours. Mr. Horn is gone. I could just feel it.
Rick joins the others.
Yeah, he's gone. Probably in Geneva by now.
Hey, look, y'all, I'm sorry, for real.
Rick throws a glass against the wall.
Come on, Marshall.
Rick storms off to another part of the suite. The sun rises over downtown Chicago. In her office, Harriet sits at her desk and drinks coffee. She takes out a ruler and studies a balance sheet. She spots the three large transfers with the word overdrawn next to the accounts. She frowns and sets the ruler aside. She leaves her office with a folder, then walks into the office with the stacks of ledgers. She picks out the ledgers from the three companies, then sets them on a table. Her brow furrows as she looks over each ledger. She spots torn edges of paper along the spine of the ledgers. She makes a phone call.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, Charlie. It's Harriet. I seem to be missing a couple of balance report cover sheets. Yeah, can you pull the current balances of Northern Levers, Ben Holland Distillers, and Kebler Byers?
In the hotel suite, LaDonna sleeps in a chair. Marshall sleeps on an adjacent couch. Rick leans on a bar and stares off. Danny gets up from a sofa bed and crosses the room. Danny's eyes widen as he turns to the door. LaDonna and Marshall wake up. The thug peers through the peephole. Jeremy enters with a room service cart.
Hey. It is time to eat.
Jeremy leaves. The friends look at their new passports.
Thank you. I am truly sorry about yesterday. Here are the tickets and passports. Flights are on time, and we are good to go this afternoon. But something else did come up. Lay low. I gotta walk into a clearinghouse bank to transfer our funds to Geneva. Eat up.
This is for real.
He has a heart attack.
Charlie enters Harriet's office with balance sheets. Harriet confirms each account is overdrawn.
Shit. Charlie, I need you to call the management of the major payment desk for each of these companies. I need to speak with the CFOs now. And get me the FBI.
Jeremy walks through the glass doors at the new Bank of Chicago. He slowly walks through the spacious bank and slightly purses his lips. He approaches the line of teller's cages and smiles at the red-headed woman with wire glasses. She gives a polite smile, then steps away from her wicket. Jeremy's smile fades. He saunters over to a desk where the cashier hands the leather folder to a colleague. Jeremy and the cashier follow the colleague across the lobby. She ushers Jeremy into an office. A man sits behind a desk. The colleague shows him the leather folder. He eyes Jeremy with suspicion as Jeremy sits across from him.
This is
unusually large sum. Mr. Horn.
Is there a problem?
The man holds a pen and hesitates. At the hotel suite.
It's me. Put me on speaker. Everyone there?
The four friends gather around the phone.
We did it. It's done. The transfer went through.
Yes!
Okay, I'll see you soon.
Marshall and Rick slap hands. A worried look crosses Danny's face.
$12 million!
Peace! 12 apiece!
Whoa!
Rick hugs LaDonna. Jeremy makes another call.
Hello?
Bree. It's me. It's on.
Great. See you tomorrow.
Right.
Words appear. Geneva, Switzerland. The city appears in an aerial view. Ray and Bree walk through the grand lobby of the Bank of Geneva. They approach a teller who leads them to an office. Bree carries a folder. A man at a desk opens it and looks over an outgoing wire funds transfer request. In the office, Ray opens a handwritten note from Jeremy.
Your take is the same as Bree's. 20% of my haul. We'll deposit to your account same day it hits mine. Thank you for your truth, Buddha Ray. See you soon.
Bree's note.
Your take is 25% of my haul. Same as Buddha Ray's. We'll deposit to your account the day it hits mine. I will always love you. See you soon.
Bree nods and smiles at Ray. At an airport, planes taxi on the tarmac. Inside, Jeremy and the four friends ride up an escalator. They wait in chairs by their departure gate.
I don't think we'll ever be back.
We'll send for them.
What kind of man would leave before his daughter's born? All I feel is greed.
Hey, keep it together, people. Come on. You gotta keep it together.
There'll be no contact on this plane. Board separately, fly quietly, and don't speak to each other. I'll page you when we land. Like Marshall said, keep your emotions in check. We'll be fine.
In Harriet's office.
As CFO of this bank, I need to know where our $80 million is right now.
The funds are sitting in a clearinghouse bank.
Let's just reverse it. It's our money. They have to do that.
No, they don't. The receiving bank controls the funds.
We need to find our money before it's pushed overseas. A nationwide alert, something.
The four friends wait nervously in a lineup to board the plane. Jeremy stands further ahead in the line. He looks back at the foursome, then faces front again. Danny checks his watch. Jeremy waits at the front of the line, then looks back over his shoulder and discovers Danny missing. He scans the departure area. He spots Danny making a phone call at a payphone. He walks over to him.
I love you.
What are you doing, Danny?
I was calling my wife. She's pregnant.
Oh. Okay. So listen. I need you to do me a favor. As soon as we get on the plane, I need you to cut off my ankle bracelet.
He hands Danny a pair of pliers.
Yeah.
Jeremy looks past Danny and spots FBI agents and uniformed police officers marching toward them.
What did you do, Danny? I think you need to run.
Guys, get this guy!
The four friends sprint through the departures area. Agents and officers chase them. Jeremy raises his hands and surrenders.
Jeremy Horn, you're under arrest.
Can't find your badge.
The four friends run across a pedway. More officers and agents block their escape.
All right, guys, hit the wall. All right, guys, show me your hands. Let me see your hands. Show me your hands.
They raise their hands as the agents and officers close in. In a flashback, Danny notices Jeremy's ankle monitor at the warehouse.
I'm telling you, it is going down in 2 days. What do I do?
In the past, He meets with agents in an FBI office.
Look, son, we really need to know if what you're telling us is real.
First, I'm not your son.
I didn't mean it like that.
Second, I would not be sitting here if this wasn't real. So learn my name. It's Daniel Pugh. I have an IQ of 140. And I work at First National Bank of Chicago in check clearing on the night shift.
Another agent enters.
Yes. And I can be lazy as hell. And there are things I can and will do with my life. But right now, after 6 years, making $3.35 an hour, my wife is having a baby. And I want to move them from the shitty place that I live to a better life. So I need this money bad. But we're gonna get caught. He's gonna ruin our lives. So, if you want information on Jeremy Horn, I'm gonna need a little bit more than a coupon to a Ponderosa Steakhouse.
I believe every word you're saying.
The agent by the door shows Danny a file folder with information on Jeremy.
That's him.
Jeremy Horn is a criminal mastermind. He has an ability to convince anyone to do just about anything. And he convinced you and your friends to steal.
Let's just go pick up Horn right now.
Sure, we can arrest him. But the judge will toss out an indictment unless he moves the money.
So what do I do?
Do everything as planned.
Flashback, Danny places a tape recorder.
We need Horn's words on tape for a conviction. Don't deviate from the plan. Are we clear?
In the past, at the airport.
It's me. Yeah, the tape recorder is going to be under the bed. Look.
Scenes overlap.
I know a lot of black folks who are locked up.
Officers find the tape recorder in the hotel suite.
I got it.
The transfer went through. The funds are on the way to Geneva.
Bingo, we have it.
So if I help you...
All units, suspect spotted at the International Terminal, Gate 6.
Go.
Agents and officers rush out of the hotel suite.
I want a deal for me and my friends in writing, signed by the head of this office and the U.S. attorney. Are we clear?
In the present.
All right, guys, show me your hands. Show me your hands.
They take Danny into custody. Marshall and LaDonna try to run. Officers detain them. An agent speaks to Danny.
I'm not gonna make this look real.
The four friends are arrested on the pedway at a press conference.
His name is Jeremy Horn. He was the ringleader. We don't have the names of all those involved in the case at this time, but what is clear is that a plan was concocted by Horn to steal $80 million from First National Bank of Chicago.
You haven't said what happened to the money. Was it returned?
We're working to recover most of the money.
You said most of the money. Are you saying that not all of it was recovered?
Let's just say in the world of money transfers, it's complicated.
So what else do you want the public to know about this crime? These people have the right to know what's going on here.
Did Jeremy Horn show any remorse?
A voiceover.
Order in the court. Jeremy Horn, how do you plead?
Your Honor, I'm only guilty of being caught.
Credits. Audio description by Descriptive Video Works. Written by Bixie Jean. Narrated by Lane Kelly. Starring Courtney B. Vance, Keisha Sharp, Bentley Green, Precious Way, Xavier Clyde, Nikon Robertson, and Keith David. Written by Dwayne Johnson Cochran. Directed by Minhaj Huda. Copyright 2023. Viacom International, Inc. All rights reserved. Logos appear. Bass Vance Production. Gunpowder and Sky. MTV Entertainment Studios, a presentation of Showtime Networks, Inc., a Paramount company.